I'm Beatrice, your host of the Let's Talk Relationships podcast. Join me and my guests as we explore all things related to singleness, dating, and relationships. Together, we'll hear from real, everyday people and a few professionals and their experiences with self-growth, heartbreak, modern-day dating, and so much more. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're here for the long haul, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Talk Relationships. I've got a really, really great guest with me today. His name is Corey Camp. Hi, Corey.
What's going on?
What's going on? I've been trying to get this guy on the podcast for a while now, but timing worked out perfectly, and so we're excited to have him on and to talk to him kind of about his journey over the last, I'd say, couple of years. Of just like growth and developing and learning more about himself and just kind of navigating the relationship dating world. So I'm so excited to have you on, Corey. I think you're going to bring such a good perspective, and I feel like my listeners are going to be really excited to hear from you, especially from a male's perspective. I think that's so important to kind of talk to both sides. So, I mean, you know what's funny? I was thinking about how we met earlier. I was like, I met you through Lauren Donahue initially.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
In LA. But so funny. Shout out to Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Shout out, Lauren. I think we were going to church home.
Yes, that's what it was. Oh my God, I think it was your first time back at church. Like,
it was. We've come a long way. We got a lot
we've
to
come
talk
a
about
lot.
From that point
We got
on.
So much to talk about. I love it. But give us a little background. You've accomplished so much over the last, I think, 5 years. And so I don't want to misspeak on what you're working on and what you're doing. So tell us a little bit about who Corey Camp is.
Such a good question. Well, first off, thank you for having me. I'm really honored and excited and just grateful for the space, first and foremost. For those that aren't familiar with me, for a while I would identify as just an athletic dude. That was the only identity that I really held true to for a while. Swam growing up, swam in college. So at a pretty high level, and then felt very lost when that was all said and done. So the past really 6-7 years here has been dedicated to exploring who am I outside of that identity of just an athlete, and how can I then help other athletes really eliminate that isolation feeling after the game is over. And that's where the company that I've built, Forever Athlete, kind of comes into play. We do community events. We do an online platform that is geared towards just helping people with a like-minded and similar background connect more and closely and do so with a consistent cadence. And by the time this is out, I will have opened a gym here in Austin, Texas. So I'm excited for that next chapter to kind of give what has been this asynchronous social club a home to come together and connect more frequently. I've just been hosting events all over the city, so now we'll have an actual brick and mortar space to come together, which I'm stoked for.
That's incredible. Congrats. I know we were talking about that the other day, and I was like, that's so you, and it's so perfect for you. I feel like God totally orchestrated that for you, and it's I love that. I think something I always admired about you, too, is your willingness in doing all this to be really vulnerable and to actually, tell your truth about what you've been struggling with or what you've been going through. And I think that's so valuable for men. I feel like that's what I appreciate about you so much is you're so willing to go there and to talk through the hard stuff. The things that people don't necessarily want to talk about or touch on, especially as men. So I just want to applaud you for that. Cause it for me, I follow a ton of a variety of people, and it's I think that's something that's so special. I'd say it's rare. You don't see it as much.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I think what's really fascinating, it kind of started actually for me through podcasting. So back in 2019, in that fall, I started what was called the Athletic Mindset Podcast back then. My whole vision of this was I was going to sit down with elite level athletes and talk to them about the mindset that they brought to their elite performances. And what was really cool was I had an opportunity to sit down with NFL players, Olympic gold medalists, world record holders, the elite of the elite, that would make my athletic feats kind of look like nothing next to them if you put them side by side. But it was wild because we started talking, and it was decent conversation when we talked about where their mindset was around like the performance itself, but we really got to like connect and bond over the things that weren't being really talked about publicly. The struggles beyond the sport, like figuring out who they were. And that was really what encouraged me to say, okay, like I can start opening up about this. This is what I'm going through. And then all of a sudden now it's met with, oh, there's like 1,000 other people that are going through this as well. Okay, I feel a little less alone in this struggle. How do we then support one another? I think is where we collectively get to go as a next step, because social media is this like really, really cool and powerful tool, but it can also be this very dangerous playground where it will continue to validate whatever experience you hold. And while that's great, especially initially, if you're feeling isolated, eventually like it can feel like you just stay stuck and trapped in that cycle. So that's kind of where I've noticed my own journey over these past few years. It's like, as I'm sharing struggles, whether that be like my relationship with alcohol, relationships in general, it's how do I move from, okay, I feel less alone in this, but where's the actual like work get to be done? How do I not just talk about it on online, but actually go live it out in person?
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people get stuck too. You know, it's like you acknowledge the problem, you see it, or you like, oh, other people are struggling with this too. And it's like, now what? You know, what's the next? So I'm curious for you, like, what was that moment like for you? And how did that even translate into other areas of your life? Not just, you know, in athletics, but like in dating. And I know you had said you kind of took quite a bit of time off of even dating, kind of as you were growing and as you were kind of going through that, which I think is great. And I don't think a lot of people do that. So I do want to like commend you for that. It's like, hey, I'm not in a good space. I don't really know who I am. I'm struggling with this. It's like, why would I then try and bring someone else into my world when my world is like just upside down? I don't even know what it is. It's just chaos, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I spent a majority of my 20s single, or I guess at this point, like half of my 20s single. So I went through about a 5-year period where dating just like wasn't a priority. And what was interesting in that was, it initially started kind of just where I was like, you know, I'm focused on career. And I'm sure people hear that all the time where they're like, oh, I can't give you the relationship you need. Like, I'm just focused on my career right now, which is great. But we will also want to be careful of, are you prolonging that season and like missing great opportunities along that process? And that's what I started to notice at the end of that 5-year period for me. It was like, okay, cool. I'm doing all the work on myself. I'm going to therapy. I'm reading the books. I'm having the conversations. I'm building these really great friendships. I think what was really cool for me in that time was looking at, how do I build a friendship first and foremost with a female? Not leading from a space of like, oh, I think she's really attractive. Like, we're going to go on a date together and we're going to end up probably sleeping together, because that would be like early 20s for sure. That would be like the goal of relationships, just with how I was raised and the cultural norms. Then towards the end of that 5-year like single period, that was a really big shift where I was just like, I want to be really intentional in building just very neutral opposite sex and same sex relationships, so that I have an actual support system around me, so that when I do go into dating and intentionally dating again, like, I know I can lean on these people around me. And that's been like the biggest game changer. But shifting from like reading and doing all this internal work to like actually getting the reps, I think is so, so invaluable. And that's where a lot of people get caught up, where it's like, oh, I'm just not ready yet. And you'll never truly be ready, but you got to like watch the film, go practice, and then like go put it into play. Otherwise, we're just kidding ourselves. I'm just going to sit around and say, okay, the perfect girl is going to come along. I'm going to be swept off my feet and it's going to work. It's like, no. And the first relationship back after all that, it didn't work. And like, that's okay. You learn, you get feedback, and then you move on.
I think that's so powerful too, is taking that step, like that step toward kind of dipping your toe back into the dating scene and doing that. And I think we have a fantasy that the right person's going to come around and all of a sudden I'm just going to be a different person and it's going to be perfect. And it's like, no, that's not how it's going to work, you know? Like, you kind of have to put yourself out there and, like, you know, attempt to kind of dip your toe back in. But I love what you said about kind of building a network of friends around you and building kind of a support system. Because I think a lot of, like, this is in a previous episode, but we talked about kind of how, like, you know, some of our wounding gets healed in relationships. And that also means, mm-hmm. like, friendships. So I think cultivating great friendships is practice for cultivating a great romantic relationship. And I don't know that people always, like, think of it that way. It's like your friends are kind of your practice for a marriage, for something a little bit more intimate, more serious, because that's where you get to really practice being vulnerable. And obviously this is with, like, a select few people. This is, like, your core group of people. But it's, like, you do get to practice that. I think that that's what's so it's such a good lesson for people. I think that it's, like, friendships are really, yeah, like a practice. I think that's beautiful. Yeah.
They're a really good playground for boundaries and for practicing boundaries and learning how to communicate and just be clear on where you're at with things, right? Because I think not for whatever reason, it makes total sense. The moment that we have, like, a romantic interest in someone, all of a sudden we think that the pressure is now immediately on. And the way that I relate to this from, like, the athletic world is, like, there's a difference between performing and practice, and I could be loose and just, like, there was no stakes, so to speak. And there would be times where I would go out and do a best time in practice, just from, like, pushing off the wall and going and swimming, whatever, which is super cool. It was exciting. But where did it actually matter? It was actually in the race. If we're looking for quality relationships, it's like, it's awesome to have these friendships because you can play loose. You can treat that as a playground. The stakes are a little bit lower, so to speak. And that allows you the safety then and the confidence to then step into a relationship and say, hey, okay, I know that if, for example, we had something planned later today, a date night, but something came up, like, I could communicate clearly to you that, hey, this is, you know, this, unfortunately, this came up, but we can't do this anymore. Let's suggest an alternative. But again, hey, I can't make it tonight. I'm so sorry. That's a great practice for if you had a date night and now a conflict is on the schedule, you can suggest an alternative. I think that's a really practical tool that I learned that I want to share with people is this no, yes, no sandwich, which is exactly that. It's like if conflict comes up and you're a people pleasing person and you really struggle to tell people no, always suggest an alternative. So you're practicing your no in the first bit. You're saying, hey, I can't do that anymore. And you're suggesting an alternative. That's actually you saying yes to something that better aligns with you or your schedule or whatever it may be. But then reaffirming the no so that they're clear, like, hey, this just won't work today. That's okay.
Yeah. Wow. And that's super important. I think that's something I'm also learning to do a lot more. I want to say yes to everything. And I've been learning to be like, I really have to sit with myself, be like, okay, one, do you have the energy? Two, do you want to go? Like, I've had to, you know, really ask myself and then stop and be like, you know what? I think the best answer is no. And that's so hard for me to say, but it's the practice of being like, hey, I can't this evening. I'm tired or whatnot, but we'll see you around soon. You know, I think that that's so valuable to be able to practice. Cause I think a lot go ahead.
I was going to say even shift, like, that would be an okay one, but like to make it better instead of I'll see you soon, like actually suggest a definitive alternative.
Yeah.
Right. Because especially if we're talking relationships, that will actually drive someone who, if we want to get into like attachment styles, who's like anxious attached or like leans towards that answer of like, hey, I can't tonight, but like soon, you've just like totally triggered them. They're spinning all their wheels and being like, oh my gosh, does he even like me? Does she even like me? What's going on?
So true.
I think as men, like, we can be better about communicating that. And then same as female, it goes both ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that communication breakdown is usually where relationships kind of go south anyways. It's really being able to like communicate that. And oh my God, yeah, we haven't even gotten into attachment theories on this podcast yet, because I feel like that's going to be a whole other a whole other realm. But yeah, no, I totally see that. And I mean, I think that even solves the problem of like preventing people from ghosting and, you know, things mm-hmm. of that nature, because we see that a lot in the dating scene. And I hear people, they're like, well, you don't owe this person anything. I'm like, you don't, but you do owe them a little bit of integrity, you know, in being able to communicate.
I think it's just good. It's good practice, yeah. Right? It's so, unfortunately, it's so easy to get away with it.
For sure.
In today's day and world, or day and age, because there, we could talk about this of like, there's an abundance of choice out there, whether it be you're on the dating apps or you're not on the dating apps. I get asked all the time, like, how are you meeting people, Corey? Like, how do you go on dates? And I was like, well, believe it or not, I deleted all my dating apps three and a half, four years ago. Cause out of really the start of COVID, as soon as the world shut down, I was like, well, this is stupid. Why am I going to connect with someone virtually? And there's no timetable of when we might be allowed to meet up. So
yeah,
whatever, I'm done with these things, got rid of them. And people are like, okay, well, now how do you meet people? It's like, well, Instagram essentially is a dating app in and of itself. And it can be challenging because whether it be your dating apps, your Instagrams of the world, it doesn't really matter. The downside towards relationship is there's this abundance of choice. And where that can become a slippery slope is if the moment you face any sort of friction or you go on that one date or they say something a little bit off in just the initial texting phase and you're like, oh, I got the ick, like I'm done. This person, not my person. It's easy to ghost because you know in the back of your head, well, there's and really an infinite number of other high quality yeah. options available to me behind this screen. So I'm going to go there. And just because it's easy to go that route doesn't mean we should. I think it's great practice. Even
absolutely.
I'm a huge believer of just like, yeah, you're not vibing that person. It doesn't need to be the most complex text. It could be two sentences. Hey, I really don't see you as more than a friend. I really appreciate this conversation and this period getting to know one another. I would love to continue to support you as a friend if you would, or if you wouldn't, don't say that part. And just like,
yeah.
wish you all the best. You know what I mean? Like it could be as simple as that.
No, I 100%, I'm like, everyone listening, just type that out in your notes and save it. You know, like I couldn't agree anymore. It's like, you can copy and paste it and send it to somebody if you're not interested or if you don't want to go on a second date or, you know, whatnot. And it's like, it's the simplest thing. You don't even, yeah, you don't have to call them. You don't have to be this long conversation. And it's just crazy that people just don't do it. Like I was set up with somebody a couple months ago. So it was like through a mutual friend and the date was fun. Mm-hmm. It was fine. And then I just never heard from him again. And I'm like, we have a mutual friend. So now this is weird. I'm like, you could simply be like, it was so great meeting you. I don't see anything romantic, but like, yeah, I'll see you around because I will see you around because we're in similar, you know, circles. So I always find that so like, it's not that hard to just send that, you know? And it's like, yeah. Gosh, it's so frustrating for a lot of people.
I think to be fair, we overthink that, right? We think that's going to be harsh.
Yeah.
And
yes,
to receive that message. And if anything, I would say that's like the kindest thing you could actually be doing is clearly communicating where you're
yeah.
at. It might be harsh in that moment, but I promise both of you would be really appreciative of that in the long term.
For right? Sure.
The fact that you feel the need to tell that story a few months
yeah.
later, obviously it was like, oh, okay, like that was actually a more lasting harm, so to speak.
Yeah.
Than if you just received that text right after or a few days later and said, hey, I really reflected on our time together. You're a great person. You're just not my person at this point. I wish you the best.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, awesome. Let's go on with our lives from here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's like, yeah, I use that example just because it's I feel like when I meet someone on an app, I'm like, okay, what? I don't even know you. We have no mutual friends. Like there's like the bar is so low at that point. But I think when you yeah. have mutual friends and you see them often, it's like, it's always so surprising to me, you know, that like that doesn't happen, you know, and it doesn't happen a lot. Like, I hear that with so many friends complaining about it. They're like, yeah, they just never said anything. And I think, you know, I've asked people, like, why do you not send the text? Why? And they're like, oh, I feel bad. And I'm like, I kind of just want to call crap, because I'm like, I think it's because you don't want to feel bad. It's not about the other person. Like, I think people say that, but truthfully, I think it's really a little bit selfish. I think it's that we just don't want to feel awkward, and we don't want to go through that feeling on our own. It's not as much. If you were really thinking about the other person, you would send the text, you know?
Yeah. I mean, ghosting allows us to defer any sort of responsibility in a way.
Yeah, for sure.
We can...
For sure.
We kind of like brush it under the rug.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it's
like,
all
oh,
fun.
It's a big deal.
It's all great until like you meet that person that you're like, oh my gosh, like we really vibed. And then it doesn't happen, or it happens to you. And then you're kind of sit there like, oh, what the heck? Like, she didn't even text me back. I thought we were really vibing. Like, I'm so lost. I'm so confused. And you're like, well, hey. But also, you can send that text. Like, if you're on the receiving end of that and you feel like you're being ghosted and you really truly feel like there was a connection there, it doesn't hurt to reach out. Like, you're not, we're always so worried of how communication will be perceived. As long as you're direct and clear, which takes practice, I'm of the camp of like, that is always preferred to me. I'm okay with like, be direct with me, be harsh. I don't mind. I would rather have certainty than enclosure, than like sitting in my anxious mind being like, maybe that could have been the one type deal, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point. I don't think I ever even really think about it on that end, is to like, if you feel like you're being ghosted, to actually okay to reach out. Because so many, like online, all these dating coaches, a lot of people are like, oh no, just forget them. If they didn't text you back, they're not your person, move on. But it's interesting to like really think about that. Like, do you just send something like, hey, I haven't heard from you for a week. Like, if you aren't interested, it'd be great just to know, to hear from you and to know that, versus, you know, just ignoring me. Maybe don't say it that way, but the gist of what the text would say, you know, like, I think that that's,
I think there's no harm in that, because if you're sitting in a space where you're continually thinking about that, you're getting caught up from realistically putting yourself in a position to actually move forward. That's okay. Acknowledge it, recognize it. Otherwise, like, what you resist continues to persist. So if you're like continually caught up on that person or the idea of that person, get clarity of who that person actually is by communicating that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't control what happens on the other side. I think what's fascinating when we're talking about relationships is like, it reminds me oftentimes of, you know, that dividing door in hotel rooms. Like, sometimes if you get hotel rooms with some friends and like split side by side, and you have that door that goes back and forth between the two. Thankfully, most hotels, all hotels, require you to unlock said door from both sides. So it's not like if you don't know the person on the in the other room, you can't just decide to unlock the door and walk into their room and say, hey, what's up? I'm Beatrice, guys. I'm here for a good time. They have to mutually consent to unlocking that door. And it's the same thing with relationship, is all relationships is this constant consent of, are you willing to unlock your door and I'm willing to unlock my door? And we can then potentially explore the nuance and meeting in the middle and getting to know each other. That's what's also really frustrating, is because sometimes that person, or you aren't, you might be subconsciously locking your own door and you don't even realize it. Guys do that a lot, where we just shut down and we're like, I just don't understand it. And you're like, well, like, you're just kind of like surface level vulnerability with it, versus actually unlocking and going there with this person. No wonder they don't feel like an emotional connection. Or on the other side, it's like that potential partner or your current partner has locked their door, and that's where it becomes this delicate, beautiful dance of like, okay, how do we give that space? How do we let them know that, hey, it's safe to unlock that door? And again, that's where communication comes into like play there.
Well, what do you feel like, why do you feel like men fear to unlock that door? Like, what is the fear behind unlocking that from a guy's perspective?
So when I was in DC, what really sucked in the dating scene there, from my perspective, was, I mean, for context, I was born and raised in the DC area. And I remember when I was like 23, 24 years old, that was when I was going through this like post-sport transition the hardest. Had really no idea who I was, what I wanted to do. I was drinking a lot. I had a problem with alcohol, and for context, I'm now, that was kind of like really what inspired a lot of my sober journey, was building a better relationship with alcohol so I could build better relationships with people around me, and making sure that those relationships were built on like a firm foundation rather than, oh yeah, we just like, we think each other is attractive, and when we get drunk, we have a good time together. Like, this is the best relationship for me. It's like, no, that's just a fun time person. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like that's surfacing. Not gonna be the person that's gonna help me.
Exactly. Yeah. And same thing with friendships. So, but back when I was in DC, especially at that time, like that was what I was doing every weekend. And a lot of why I drank was because I didn't like how I was feeling about myself during the week. So I wanted to drown that out. And I would go out to these bars. And I remember talking to girls, oh, DC, like East Coast in general, like the number one question, first question, what do you do? If you meet someone, it's like, what's your name? What do you do? And it's a great like vetting question, because you're essentially being very selective. You want to make sure that your partner or potential partner, or even someone that you're just going to sleep with that night, is like a high value person. And at that time, I was a swim coach and a lifeguard. I was making ends meet, and I was doing both of those like at a really high level, actually, which was crazy because I was able to live on my own doing so. But in people's immediate perception, I could be hitting it off, having a great conversation with a girl, and then she hears, oh, I'm a swim coach and a lifeguard, she's like immediately shut down, locks that door. And so then my reaction, what I learn is, well, if I want to be successful in even having a shot with a date or getting to know someone on a deeper level, I need to now hide what I do for a living, because of, I'm worried about their perception of that. And I think that's why men, because there is this expectation on us that we need to be the leaders in the relationship. We're looked to at as, hey, you are meant to lead us. I mean, if you want to look at it through the Christian dating lens, like men are called to submit to God, and then women are then called to submit to their husband or submit to their partner in that order. And we need to get that positioning right. And if we're trying to lead, but we don't feel like we have our shit together, then that's a really challenging space to lead from. And there's this fear of, if I unlock my door and you see how messy my apartment is, I don't know, you might not like it. You might judge me. And then it becomes real. And what's interesting is, in order for us to truly be loved, we have to be willing to not be liked. For us to experience real intimacy in our life, we have to be willing to show that mess and say, hey, I trust you enough for you to not quickly judge what you see at its surface, but you're willing to work with me as I clean this up. Or you don't even need to help me. I just need you to know, like, yeah, this part of my life, it's not in order, but I'm really trying, and I hope that you trust me in that, and vice versa, right? Like, no one in today's world has all of the buckets of their lives perfectly put together. That's not a real relationship.
Yeah.
And so we got to stop thinking like that's the ideal picturesque thing. We got to start with, it's not letting people in on our deepest, darkest traumas from our past life, but saying, hey, like, yeah, I'm in a space right now where honestly, like, I'm figuring out the career thing.
Yeah.
And people hopefully being open to say, okay, cool, same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's often what, in DC, I would imagine 90% of those girls that were immediately shutting down, probably to some varying degree, were also like, I don't know what I'm doing in my career. And it's very clear that like, he doesn't have the consulting job or the lawyer, he's in politics. So because I don't have it figured out, how could he doesn't have it figured out, this won't work. It's like, but what if we tried to figure it out together?
Yeah.
Who knows? We want to try to sit in that nuance, but the nuances takes time. And we're just in a world where we feel like time is so limited. So we want to make that decision really, really quick. It's like, let's go slow. Like, let's explore the nuance. You don't have to get married on date one, but that's exactly how we treat things.
No, it's true. And I think we try to avoid heartbreak and, you know, and like disappointment. And I think that's why we keep our expectations maybe a little bit unrealistic and incredibly high. Because it's almost in a way a little safer. Like I sometimes feel that way. I'm like, the thing that I really, really want sometimes scares me. And I'm like, am I expectations just so unrealistically high that it kind of in a way, like something I can kind of hide behind, like, oh, well, you don't meet all these things. So let me just goodbye, you know? But I think that that's so true. It's like, we take the time to really cultivate the also the friendship kind of behind really getting to know someone before immediately writing them off, you know, based on like 2-3 things that we're like, eh, about, you know. It's like, I feel like we just don't, invest that time in people anymore. And we are really quick to kind of write people off.
Yeah, we do that because it leaves a backdoor exit open. So we can Irish goodbye and say, okay, well, that didn't work. Like, they had this wrong. And I'm not saying, like, there's it's case-by-case basis. For sure. There will be relationships where it absolutely makes sense that, like, you need to get out of there. And you'll know, but in general, what I've noticed, it's like, it's almost like playing, like I played video games with my little brother growing up, and my brother was more into video games than I was. And it was the classic, if he ever beat me, my first go-to excuse was, I wasn't trying, Scott. So like, you didn't actually beat me. I wasn't trying my hardest. And again, that allows us to defer responsibility. It prevents it from actually being real. But by you not trying, you get off the hook and you can say, okay, I can sleep easier now. But that's preventing you from the thing that you actually want. The thing that you're most afraid of is what you need to go do to get what you actually want. So even if you have, like, the unrealistic expectations are actually a way of you not trying, so to speak, in relationship. Because if you hold this, like, 10 out of 10 standard for everyone, this perfect image of people, guess what? You're going to be highly disappointed because, newsflash, we live in an imperfect world. Everyone here, we are flawed. We have something that we are currently working on and probably a lot more that we don't even know that we have to work on. But the beautiful part of relationship, whether it be relationship with self or relationship with others, is this blending of that grace and truth and having true self-compassion and love for one another and for self, that allows you to start to work through those flaws and say, okay, how do I get a little bit better at this? Is this person my partner right now? Is there a flaw here? And how can I support them in working through that? What does that look like? Or what's better for both of us? Would it make sense to create space and allow them to heal and I'll heal, and maybe down the road, who knows what might happen. Again, relationships are tough because it's dynamic. We expect other people to work like our iPhone.
Yeah.
We just like program in a certain thing. We take them on the 5 dates and then input. That's the input. What's the output? It's like, unfortunately, it's not that easy.
Yeah. It's like, we have to be willing to endure heartbreak in order to enter a relationship, like, because that may possibly happen. And I think when we try to avoid it is when we shut parts of ourselves down or don't allow someone to see us, because we're just trying to protect ourselves. Really what it is a protection mechanism. And it's like, love, with love comes risk, with love comes heartbreak, with love comes the possibility of deep heartbreak, you know, but that's the risk we're willing to take for the thing we really, really want, you know, and they go hand in hand.
Yeah, you have to be willing to risk, right? Risk is actually what gets you to the other side. And knowing that, I think what really helps in getting okay with risking is if you, like, individually, a lot of the work that I've had to do, especially lately, has been getting clear on who God has made me to be and understanding that that is unconditional. my identity as a child of God is unconditional. And so when I do my best practice daily to tap into that identity, into that posture,
yeah,
I can then step into whatever arena, whether it be stepping into this podcast, going on social media, the day-to-day interactions that I have. I know that I'm good regardless. I know that he's got me. So therefore I can risk, and I actually want to risk because of that image that I was created in. And I get excited and I am willing to like press that boundary a yeah. little bit more and risk a little bit more and bring a better effort to the table and see what happens as a result. And that's where I think people get caught up, is we get so focused on our worldly identities. How am I viewing myself and how is the world viewing me first and foremost? And then we like sprinkle in that last little bit, that unconditional, oh, okay, yeah, cool. Like Jesus died for our sins, I'm a child of God. Okay, great. Like, what if we lead with that? What if you center with that? And then everything that you choose to do today is an expression of that identity, that core unconditional, who you were created by. You asked me at the very beginning, like, who are you? what are you? I was like, I love that question. And I think to better answer it is, I'm a creator, I'm a community builder, I'm a cultivator. And I love bringing people together and making people feel like they're the most special person in the world. Like when I throw an event, what I really feel like God has put on my heart is this innate ability to welcome someone into a space where they immediately feel at home, they immediately feel comfortable. And I just love doing that. And I know that that is showing up in the events that I get to host, or it's showing up in the podcast, it's showing up in the conversation that I have with someone. But that comes from an unconditional source. And when I get clear on that, I might get hurt if the conversation doesn't go well, or that connection that I was really hoping panned out didn't pan out. But I know that he's given me the peace and the strength to move forward afterwards. And like, that's been honestly the biggest lesson for me this year has been exactly that. Like, get clear on that unconditional view of self yeah. in his image, and then lead from that in everything that I do.
Wow. That's awesome to hear, especially coming from, just a guy. Like, I know I say that a lot, but it's like sometimes we just don't see that enough, and it's just it's awesome. I think that's like I think about myself too. It's I'm able to even do something like this, like a podcast, because I know that my identity is in God and it's not about me. It's like I find that the things that God pushes me to do, it's like it's not about me. It's about glorifying Him. It's about Him in those things. So it allows me to rest, because I wasn't like, oh, I want to start a podcast. I was like, a podcast? Why? Like, let me just share everything with everyone. You know, I was like, this can't be right, you know? And so it's so beautiful when you say yes to that, and you say yes to your identity in God, and you say yes to what He has called you to do. Like, He runs the show, and it's not about you. It's like He works through you. And it's so awesome to see, because it helps kind of take a little bit of the ego out of things as well, you know? And it allows you to see things so differently, because it's not self-serving. It's like, well, how do I glorify you in this? How do I, you know, and it's like even this podcast, like finding people to interview, and it's worked out so seamlessly, and the conversations have been so amazing. And it's like, yeah, because I didn't make it about myself. I made it about God. Like, I made it about what do you want me to do today? What do you want me to talk about? You know, and it's so backwards from like, people had told me, like, oh, you got to plan all your podcasts and write out a script and do all this. And I was like, but that's me doing it then, you know? It's like, how do I let God work through me and to do it? So I think I'm like super encouraged by this conversation. So I love hearing that from you, because I'm like, it's a reminder to me, like my career, all that, like, doesn't really, like, at the end of the day, the specifics of it doesn't really matter. But it's like, what did God create me to be, and how am I living my life through that lens?
Yeah, that's encouraging. I mean, let's apply that to dating, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you apply that, the same framework that you just said around podcasting, and I can attest to that too. Like, the first 20 episodes that I recorded back in 2019 into 2020, absolute trash. Because why? I would literally, with my guests, I'd get so nervous. I would like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting down with like this idol that I grew up idolizing in the swimming world today. And he's a world record holder and he has all these medals and all these accolades. And I need to list out my 20 questions so that I'm really, really prepared. And I want to impress him. I want to wow him. So I'm going to overanalyze all this. And I would like listen to his response, but I wasn't listening. I was just waiting for him to stop talking to then ask the next question on my list. And in doing so, I overprepared and I would miss the beauty of what was actually being said in the moment. Yeah. And I think we do that in dating all the time. We don't sit in that nuance. We're trying to move through the motions. We're trying to check the boxes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like we connected great. Like we flirted back and forth 5 times. And then the dating coach told me after those 5 messages, we need to move it off of the app and into texting. And then after those 10 messages there, like if we don't have a date scheduled, then I don't know, it's probably not worth going to work out. It's probably not worth my time. It's like, stop getting so rigid in this and allow like free flowing connection to happen. You can't force vulnerability. You can't force mm-hmm. connection upon anyone. The most beautiful intimacy, real intimacy is slow regardless.
Very.
I don't care how fast of a connection you guys have. You can have chemistry. That's different than real intimacy. Real intimacy just takes time. And we're so pressed where it's like, do these 5 things, ask these 3 questions to build better relationships, to build deeper intimacy with your partner.
Yeah.
But guess what? Intimacy isn't built in one conversation. It's not built in one date. Mm-hmm. It's built over continually having these deeper conversations, continued reps over and over and over again. And so when we're looking at whether it be a podcast mm-hmm. or you're sitting down on a first date, I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I got so nervous sitting down on the first date, same as I would idolize the Olympian. I'd idolize that person. Oh, their Instagram. Yeah. They look like this, this, and this. I really hope this works out. She's a freaking model. Like that's the partner that I want to have. No, if I go in with that lens, I'm going to miss the true beauty of potential connection there in front of me, because I'm just stuck in the image that I've created and expectations I've created around this mm-hmm. partner. And I've placed that on them without their consent. I've already built it in my head. I've looked at their feed. And so some of the practical ways to like fight against that, what if we don't, like I had someone recently, she was giving me a hard time. She's like, you didn't follow me back on Instagram. And I was like, yeah, we didn't know each other. So I was like, I wanted to get to know you first before I followed you back on Instagram. And like, I also want them to tell me about their life rather than me see it on the stories or going through the feed. Practical advice for people. It's like, hey, today's day and age, like maybe do a little bit of research, but from a guy's perspective, like I challenge guys not to go, don't go scrolling through the girl's feed being like, oh my gosh, like what is she up to? Just explore that with her. Like, let her be the one to tell you this and the things that are on her feed, and you'll probably learn things that aren't posted on there anyway. And that's mm-hmm. real. Like, that's where real connection happens, not through the potential thing, the perfectly curated photo that then you start to imagine yourself on that vacation with her, like she's wearing that dress with you, whatever it may be.
Well, and I wonder too, we make these stories up in our head. We have these expectations. And then when they do one thing that now doesn't meet this most likely false expectation that we had based on one photo that they posted, we're like, he's just not it. It's just, you know, it drove me crazy. He did this one thing and it's just, ugh, I don't like him. And I'm like, what? Like, you know, and it's like, gosh, are we just missing partners that maybe are right in front of us, you know, like because of, maybe our expectations are just, you know, I think about that a lot, you know, like, did I ever pass someone up because I had some dumb like idea or, you know, but I wonder, like, I see so many amazing people that are single and I'm like, what? Like, that's like kind of why I started this pod. I'm like, why? I want to get to the bottom of this. Like, you're amazing. We're all single. Like, I know we've all worked on ourselves. We've all done it. But like, what is the barrier? I feel like there is this massive barrier. And it's like, how do we like break through it, especially like in the church and like through, you know, even just in this little, my little bubble of like West LA, you know, I just always, not that I'm going to be the answer, but I'm just like, how as a collective do we like improve this dating world and dating scene and not have to make it so horrible? So it's like, everyone I talk to, like, we always, and I'm talking about relationships, and it's always like, ugh, dating, ugh. Like, it's like, no one's ever been like, oh, I actually enjoy getting to know people, and it's fun, and it's, you know, I just think I you know, is it our expectations going into dating? Like, if we, like, the way you're talking about it, like, if we just went into, like, a first date as, like, I'm just getting to know this person, like, on a just, like, do I like you? Do I have anything in common with you? Versus, like, am I going to marry you? Are we going to be, are you going to be my boyfriend? Or, you know, like, going 15 steps before. And I, you know, it's like it kind of ruins the first date before it even started.
It's not a job interview, right? Like, you're not trying to fill, it's not like you have a vacancy in your life and you're trying to fill it. And if you are, that's your first problem. Like, that's why your relationships suck, is because you're trying to ask people to be an employee of, in your life, or a piece of your life. And you can't place roles onto other people that they don't. No. Except, you know what I mean? No. They're not applying for. I always laugh when I see the, yeah, have you seen the people, people put out like, oh, here's my boyfriend application. Like, go submit. I'm like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, that's honestly a big, I don't know, you know, I hate the word red flag, but that's definitely something that I'd be like, okay, proceed with caution. If you're seeing that sort of stuff, proceed with caution. Out there. I think too, I know icks were like a big thing a few years ago. People were like, oh, like they're just, we're always going to get what we look for. And for me, like the biggest ick for me, I immediately get turned off from my perspective if I see that they are on a potential partner is unwilling to explore the nuance of a particular issue or miscommunication. Because if that happens and there's a difference between like being standing for something and like truly like believing in something versus, hey, like let's explore this complex issue, whatever it may be, because there's going to be, newsflash, disagreements in your relationship at some point.
Absolutely.
How do you handle conflict resolution is a huge success or metric of where is this relationship going to go? And if you can't handle conflict, then that's not like, I know, at least I can definitively say that's not the partner that I want in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I even like, you know, I've read a lot of John Gottman's work and he talks about like couples that can, turn toward each other and really resolve conflict. It's not that they have conflict. Everyone will have conflict, but it's how they come out of the conflict will determine the success of the relationship. Like, it'll determine also how long someone can actually be in a relationship. And I feel like conflict resolution is so vital to any relationship, friendships, families, like all of that. I feel like, again, that we, like we talked about earlier, that all can be practiced within friendship. It can be practiced within your, you know, your immediate circles. But yeah, I think that's a huge one that I don't think people look at a lot. I think we look at some of the more surface things and we kind of forget the things that will actually make the relationship last and give substance to the relationship. So we put a lot of emphasis on, you know, I talked about this in another podcast, like suitability versus compatibility. It's like, I can be compatible with like 30 people. We like the same things. We're both into the same sports. We like to work out. We're healthy people. Like that's all great, but that's also, I could be that with like so many people, so many guys, you know? And so it's really understanding, like, are we suitable for one another? Can we resolve conflict? Do we turn toward each other? Like, you know, is there like true deep intimacy? Can we build it? You know, all that stuff I think is so important. And I think we're also not even taught to like look for these things. It's like how the only reason I feel like I know to look for them is because I've done a lot of the work and I've researched a lot because I got really interested in understanding, well, what makes a relationship work? Like I got out of one and I was like, I don't think I even know what to look for. I don't even know what's important. And I kind of did the work on my own because I didn't have great examples. But I just think in general, like, I don't know, we're just not really like taught that. Like, how do you know if you don't have the examples or you're not really digging and reading and trying to understand how they work? But I think there's just a lot of those things that we don't know to look for.
Yeah, I think to your point there of like doing that work and exploring the nuance, that's where people shift from like an idea of like, mm-hmm. oh, I like the idea of this person as a partner, to like an actual, let's put this into practice. This could be something real. And we like to keep things, it's safe to keep things as ideas.
Of course.
Because again, like, you're off the hook, no responsibility. It's like, I could date so-and-so from the gym because like we align on the same values. Like, could date mm-hmm. so-and-so from church, like whatever it may be. But we have to be willing to move it into, if you want relationship, actually, you have to be willing to move it into, okay, like press play, go for it, explore it. It doesn't come without hurt. It doesn't come without all this other stuff, but
no.
You got to be willing to say, like, is that worth it? And I think deep down, it's fun. Like, we were designed to be in a relationship. We were designed not to do life alone. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's a calling to explore all this, but it's also a responsibility to understand, like, yes, am I doing the work to show up to that calling as my best version of myself? And that is something that is dynamic, and that takes time, and that will, but yeah, it's fun.
I love it. Now I have not a left field question, but from a guy's perspective, how do you feel about a girl making the first move? Because this has been a topic of discussion amongst friends of mine over the last couple weeks. And I'm curious from a guy's perspective, how do you feel about a woman making the first move? Whether it's just like, hey, I want to get coffee. Hey, do you want to hang out? Like, curious. Have you experienced it? And two, how you feel about it?
Yeah, I had an instance last year, actually, where... like, pro tip for any guys out there, if you're struggling to get dates, do something like this. I put out a piece of content on TikTok where I said, after 5 years single, these are the 5 green flags I'm looking for in a relationship. And I listed out 5 things that were important for me in a potential partner. And a lot of it had to do with communication, identity of themselves outside of relationship, but they're not dependent on the relationship, deriving their value from that. Wanted someone that is ambitious towards a certain goal, and we can support one another and all that. And what was really funny out of that, like, the video did really well. We're talking like millions of views, and all of a sudden my inbox was flooded with girls from all over the world making that first move, being like, I fit your 5 green flags. I am this. And
I mean, kudos.
How they led really determined if I even responded in the first place, let alone my, like, do I like this or not? And I think when it's led from a place of like, hey, I really liked what you had to say there. It was really thought provoking. I would like to explore or talk about that more. I was way more likely to say, yeah, like, let's go and explore this. Now, on the flip side, you have people out there, like, women were sending me just naked pictures after that video.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
What, like, in what world did these 5 green flags lead you to assume that, like, I wanted nudes from you? Like, no.
Wow.
Like, that's
this
not
unlocked
what,
a whole
like,
thing
work.
I didn't know.
You didn't
oh,
know.
Oh, man.
Social media is a wild, wild west
wow.
of sorts out there. So I think from my perspective, at least, one, it's like, yeah, if I was younger and more immature and like hadn't done the work and actually was looking for like a solid relationship, I would have been like, oh my gosh, dudes, like, this is so cool. Like, they're sending me pictures. Like, look at this. Whereas then I was immediately turned off. I was just like, you missed the whole point. Like, that's not who I want as a partner. Like, that's a short-term, fun, in-the-moment, like, in pleasure. But if what we're looking for is intimacy, real relationships, deeper fulfillment and enjoyment in our lives, you're going to have to say no to those short-term pleasures. And that's been a theme of my life over the past few years, is, like, intentionally creating space from short-term pleasure to explore the nuance of deeper relationship, deeper enjoyment. All of that to say, I think I'm not opposed to it. However, I do think it's good practice for guys to just say, hey, like, communicate. Like, if you're interested in someone, hey, I would like to take you out to dinner. I've learned that you know, sometimes that's not even clear enough. It has to be, I would like to take you out on a date to dinner and go from there.
Go from there. So give me an example of what would be appropriate for a girl to say to reach out if she was interested in someone and she's kind of wanting to just like, just drop, not a hint, but be a little bit more direct.
A little bit more direct. Ask a question, like spark a conversation. It's beyond just like the hey or like liking the, because I feel like that's what we all do now. It's like the Insta or the Facebook pokes from back in the day.
Become
like, oh, so and so likes all my stories, and you're like, okay, be more direct.
Nothing.
I know there's this like cutesy let's play the game of we're just tiptoeing around, we're putting little feelers out, like see if they pick up on it. I think what would be really like what would really stand out from my perspective is someone sees something that I post, or because I think that's where a lot of this is happening, or in person, like actually ask an engaging question. If you're genuinely curious about someone, ask an engaging question. And you, again, that doesn't mean like you're getting married off the first conversation, just like it opens the door from your side and it's inviting someone else into the conversation. That's all we can do.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. Because I've had so many conversations recently where it's both women are like, and I'm kind of in the middle. I'm not really sure where I stand with it, but it's like, I want the man to pursue entirely. And I don't want to have to like, you know, reach out or say anything. And then other women are like, no, if I like the guy, I'm just going to go out and ask him. So I don't know if there's a right or wrong, but it's always interesting to get people's perspective on it. But Corey, thank you so much. This was honestly, I'm like super encouraged by this conversation. So thanks for blessing me with it, because it's leaving me with a lot of things to go and think about. So it's just refreshing to hear, like I said, hear this from a male, a Christian that's like, you know, kind of living in the same world that, you know, I'm living in. And it's just encouraging. It's a really encouraging conversation. So I appreciate you so much for coming on and really giving us a lot of nuggets and some great wisdom for our listeners.
Beatrice, thank you for having me. It's so good to see you. Hope I'll see you in person here sometime soon.
Yes. Hopefully, yeah, sounds good. We'll talk soon, okay? Bye.
Awesome. Bye.